Hi everyone, glad to have you here today. We are going to talk about some mental health challenges that young people are facing today, depression and anxiety and other issues. And we have a return guest who is Miss Emily Cox, a licensed certified clinical mental health counselor and founder of Larkspur Therapy. That's a very hard word to say. Say that for me. You see,
Larkspur.
Larkspur.
I've only had to have 20,000 hours of practice, so that's the only
Well,
reason why I can get it out differently.
I think because when it's in a sentence, it's harder to say, but if you're just going to say the word Larkspur, it rolls off the tongue. So, Emily, welcome back, first of all. How are
Thank
you?
you. Thank you for having me back. I'm doing fabulous today.
Oh, that's great. You have a great deal of experience with clients exploring all kinds of issues, the LGBTQ plus, the gender identity, sexual trauma, and also feelings of being stuck and not going anywhere in their life. And you also work with the model of cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, which is a trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy when you add a TF, right? TFCBT.
You got
Okay, so now I do my homework.
it.
I'm glad you can join us today because all I've been hearing on the news and talk shows are about the addiction to the internet and the young people, and not even just the young people, all people of my age and younger and old, not maybe not older, but younger, with the phone in front of their face all the time. And I experienced that at the holidays when we went up north for Christmas and Christmas Eve. I was just horrified that everyone just found their spot with their phone. And I basically was like an ambassador from the past going to each person to talk to them.
Yeah, you're a time traveler, Mimi, don't you know?
It was time traveling, yes. And I really, I didn't mind it, but I thought it was sad. It was kind of sad, and they never really had chance to know anything else. I mean, maybe when my grandkids were little, 3 and 4, we had that Christmas Eve and we had fun and opening presents and all that. And now it's a lot different. But so what do you think the most common challenge issues that faces them today, that differs from past generations as far as the internet and the need to be on it?
I think that's a fabulous question. It's kind of a tough question too, because it can be so many different things. I think one thing that comes up a lot in my experience is that the phone, or the connection to the phone, connection to internet, connection to social media, like it's representative of something deeper and like meaningful in people's lives. So sometimes when we're looking at it from the outside, at family dinner, at holidays, at a gathering, we're like, everyone's staring at their phones. What's going on? It feels really disconnected because it is in a way. But the phones can also be this representation of connection, this representation of social relationships, social connections, connecting to others. So it can be hard to be like, ah, no phones ever, get off, be done. But it's like trying to find balance of navigating that, of like having the connection without having like a dependency on it. So I think that comes up a lot of like connecting to it in a way and having it be like a safety blanket and a resource. I think it's also a big challenge that sometimes, internet, phones, technology, social media get demonized in a way. They can cause a lot of harm. There are a lot of mental health impacts with people engaging with social media in a lot of ways. Also, though, like they are part of our lives. They aren't going away. So this kind of abstinence or like restriction from it of like, no engagement, that's also not realistic. Like how we engage with people, how we do work, how we do stuff involves technology,
Oh,
involves the
I
internet.
agree. I wouldn't be
So it's
doing
like
this.
this balance point though of like, ah, how do we get rid of it versus like everyone needs it.
The thing that's scary is it hides your identity. You can hide your identity, you can hide who you really are. And excuse me, I'm having a little voice problem. Anyway, gender identity, who you are growing up as a teenager. Not everyone wakes up and says, I'm a girl, I'm a boy, I'm going to go do girly things or boy things. And for fact, there is no girly things anymore. It's not like you can only do certain things, but different expressions of gender are still out there. And that movie Barbie was a very good metaphor for what goes on. So you have someone that is not sure who he or she is. They don't know. They have these feelings, these mixed feelings that they don't know themselves, their sexual identity, let's say. So now they can go on different websites and hide who they might be or think they might be. They have the avatars, so people don't even know what they look like. They can put a fake name, they can make up stories about themselves. I think that's a little harmful for them. What do you think about that?
That can be a tricky subject area too. I can definitely see how it can seem like harmful, potentially dangerous, potentially non-beneficial of like hiding away a certain way, of like not having concerns about safety in certain regards. And another way I kind of look at it, like a sandbox or like a safe barrier for people to explore, express, connect in certain ways. So, yes, there can be elements of danger. There can be really unsafe people trying to take advantage that exists in multiple corners of the internet. Also, there can be like bastions of safety for people to try different things, explore different things, find communities that they may not be finding in their physical world or things all around them. So, it can be a really positive thing. There can be some really concerning elements with it. But it can be really helpful, especially when going through identity exploration. If we're exploring our sexual identity, if we're finding, hey, like I have these thoughts, or I'm curious about this, or I have dreams or fantasies about this. In some ways, it can be really helpful instead of sitting in that and being like, I'm wrong. This is bad. I shouldn't be having this. No one can know this. To like go anonymous and go on Reddit or go on any website and be
Explore.
like, hey, I'm having these thoughts, and to have people validate that and hold space for that, that may not be present in our family life, in our social life, in our town life, that
Right.
can be really transformative and like meaningful for a lot of people. So while it can seem like kind of concerning of like anonymity, they can be whoever, people can be whoever, in some ways it allows this beautiful opportunity.
Well, it is an opportunity that I did not grow up with, because I was a teenager in the 60s. And gay people, people of different color, anyone that was not considered the norm, which was straight white male, was pretty much either invisible or minimized or in danger. Okay. So they didn't have that outlet, of course, and they had to keep secrets. And I know I had a date when I was, I don't know, I was 17 or something. And it was a black kid that I had met at a dance. And he asked me out and I went out with him, but I said, drop me off 2 blocks from my house. Because at that time it would have been a scandal. Like that I went out with a black guy. That's how bad it was back then. And gays, well, they just really hid. Because if it came out, they'd actually get beaten up. I mean, it was dangerous,
Right.
to any of
It's
these.
sometimes it's a necessity for survival.
It
It's not a
was this.
choice to stay down low or a choice to stay hidden. It is,
Oh.
I will get harmed, physically harmed. I will lose my job. I will get out by my community. So, like, historically, it was a survival mechanism
Oh, and
because it
plus,
wasn't tolerated.
it still is in certain ways. And then in the 70s, I had made a friend with someone. I was a bartender and he was one of my customers and he was a teller in a bank. And I didn't even know he was gay. Like he didn't come in with his nails painted or anything that might make you question his masculinity. But he got fired and he told me it was because someone found out he was gay and they didn't want him interacting with their clients. That just blows my mind. That kind of thing. So Let's think too about the dynamics. Let's go back to gender, the dynamics of gender identity and expression, because for some people, it can be greatly influenced by these societal norms, even though they're wrong, or cultural expectations, because I know for a fact, in the Black culture, gay is even more disliked, not accepted. That's where the word, that phrase down low came from. I don't know if you know that. The phrase down low came from the Black culture, and it was about men, Black men that were gay, and they say they're on the down low. Little piece of trivia. Okay, so we have this. This complexity and all this stuff going on, and expectations and personal experiences. So, how do you address that in your practice?
Addressing kind of just gender identity exploration and things that come up, especially in this context and like in the world that we live in today. I try to do this across all clients, especially with clients that are coming with any identity expression, whether it's gender identity, sexual identity, just like finding ourselves and being like, who am I? What do I like? Is coming from a basis of like safety and connection and like exploration. So like building that safe therapeutic space where it's okay to share. Sometimes we have a lot of internal questions that if we ask them to our family, our friends, our partner, can open the doors to these conversations that we might not be ready to have, to be blunt, and might be scary, overwhelming, not sure how it's going to go. So sometimes therapy can be a great practice space for that, of like exploring the questions, exploring the urges, and also like not having to have an like concrete answer or an action step with it. Just being like, I don't really know if these clothes are me. I don't really know if when I look in the mirror, I really feel like me. I don't really know if my partner is like what I'm expecting them to be or what I'm needing in this moment in my life. Those don't have to have solid answers, and those don't have to be like, okay, now I need to go home and blow up my whole life. Now I need to break up with my partner. Now I need to go home and immediately come out to my parents. Like that is not an expectation that comes in therapy and like in general in my practice. It's kind of a safe space that sandbox to just like explore and like to be held in a way that is supportive and safe and not to have all these other expectations with it.
Yeah, and I think there's stages. I mean, first of all, you're born into this world and you're told who and what you are. I have a great grandson and he is 3 and a half. We FaceTime with him. And one Sunday after church, he FaceTimed us and my husband had worn a pink dress shirt. Very nice shirt. And this boy right away said, "Poppy, why do you have on a pink shirt? Pink is for girls." All right. And I addressed it. But the thing is, here he is 3 and a half, and he has already learned somewhere that pink is for girls, right? So you come into, there's different ways you get your values, your looks at life. And a lot of it is from when you're very young. Because your parents are the ones that are showing you this. They're being your lens, let's say. So that to me is a problem already. It's some people have changed, the younger people have changed now, and they say, oh, pink is for boys or girls or whatever. But it's still not really like the norm, I don't think. I think they're still going to go out and buy a doll for a girl and a truck for a boy, But here's this kid now. Being told he's a boy and he's not supposed to like pink, he's supposed to like blue. Now, this is not my great grandson, this is a generic person.
Yes,
And,
hypothetical.
hypothetical. So now he goes to school and he starts interacting more with children. And other feelings might come up, like maybe he wants to hang out with the girls more than he does the boys. I mean, it's something where there's a lot of study being done. I don't know what they found out or have they found out the earliest that you can really understand that sexually you feel different. Have you read any studies on that?
There's a lot of literature about it, and it's hard to like quantify like the exact like this is the age range, or this is what is reporting, or this is that. The general message that I've received from it is that like it is something that comes internally. It is not like a socialized thing, or like sometimes there's a lot of fear around like, is the water turning the children gay? And like that's not accurate or like appropriate, but like that it's coming from how we connect, how we view ourselves, what feels comfortable in our bodies, what feels attractive to us, what is attractive to another person, that is present from like early stages of life. And it is not something that we are like socialized to think. So it's not like, oh, we'll just train it out of you. It's one of the many reasons why conversion therapy is harmful and abusive, but that it is part of who we are and intrinsic to our identity.
Yeah, exactly. I know, I was in 7th or 8th grade, so I was like 12 or 13, and this girl was boyish. We used to call it boyish in the old days. And she took a friendship to me, liking to me, and we were hanging out. And somewhere along the line, I realized that she was seeing me not as a girlfriend, like a pal, that there was like a romantic thing that she was feeling. And that was my first experience with that. And I didn't like shun her or anything, but it was the first time I actually experienced that. And I was young, to do that. And then as my life went on, of course, my experience and exposure with people that thought differently and were different grew. But there are a certain number of people that don't grow, if you know what I mean. Their mindset is stuck in whatever it was when they were whatever age. That blue is for boy and pink is for girls, and boys should be with girls, and all of that stuff. So it's a very hard world to be your true self in, don't you agree?
Or like to ask those questions. One thing that strikes me about that anecdote, Mimi, is that like in some context, if we, experience a relationship or experience that like we are the object of a crush, or like a crush is happening, attraction is happening, what has kind of previously been taught to us in different contexts, media, churches, family structures, is like that's wrong, that's deviant, that's gross, that's unacceptable. Which is like very harmful and damaging and doesn't allow any space for like questions, exploration, learning, growth. It's one of the positive changes, like you mentioned, of some stay stuck in that kind of mindset of like different equals gross, different equals bad, different equals evil, versus like now it's like different is different, or like there can be no different, there can be no baseline, there doesn't have to be a normal. Also, like we can have crushes and attraction on people, and that it's not equated to like danger or like harm in any way. Like people can like who they like, and it's not a personal like vindictive on them, or it's not gonna cause harm for other people.
And it's sad, but it's true that that this is still such a hot button topic, even today, more so, I think more so than ever, because the more people that come out as transsexual, transgender, not just gay, but all these different
Well, and
shades.
queer, asexual, pansexual, like many people under the LGBT rainbow.
Sexual fluency. I mean, just there's so many things. And the more that come out, the more bothers the people with that stuck mindset from 1952, let's say, or whatever. But, and it's scary because sexual assault in this country is very common, especially among girls, women, and LGBTQ people.
The number one targets of sexual violence are transgender and also members of the LGBT community. The number one population that is likely to be harmed or murdered due to their identity, due to their sexuality, are transgender women, especially transgender women of color.
And there you brought up color, so I'm going to go into that. The color, the gay, and the gender. I was having lunch a few years ago with a black gay male friend. All right. So I said, "Oh, you're a double threat because you're black and you're gay, right?" And I said, I'm going to tell you something. The way I see things going on, which is not good, it's not like we are growing, it's like we're going backwards. I feel that blacks and color, any color other than white, female and gays are in danger. We're in danger. And he agreed with me. And that over the next 4 years, look what happened. It's laws are getting repealed that were protecting women. Like all these things are happening. And it's almost like that white male straight how could I put it? I don't want to say uneducated, but uninformed group of people are trying to change us back into a former time of knowledge when knowledge wasn't as prevalent of these things. Do you get what I'm saying? I
Yeah.
know.
Well, also, it seems like a lot of like cisgender patriarchal agenda is like fixated on this period of time that didn't exist. Or like going back to family values, going back to traditional values. Well, like gay people have existed since people have existed.
They
People of
just live
color have existed since people have existed. So like
different
there was no
ways.
magical, we're talking about like magical fantasy fairyland where
Now,
like there's a man and a woman and everyone has as many babies as they can and that never existed. So sometimes when the message is like going back to family values, traditional about how things used to be, there have been all, aspects of humanity for since humanity has existed. So like, no matter how far back you go in time, there is not this magical, mystical, oh, only a man and a woman. It also sometimes can come off as like targeted and bullying in a way, because sometimes the most like vulnerable aspects of our population, trans people of color, people LGBT, trans kids, like there's this in disproportionate amount of like targeted against them, whereas like this is a very small part of our population. Is a very mighty and rich and wonderful and connected and beautiful part of the population, but like we are it, the messages is going against like the underdogs or the vulnerable or the most slighted, the most in harm, the most in danger in some way. So this like bullying thing of like going after this very small subset of people, but making it this huge platform or this huge idea, or trans kids shouldn't have any medical necessity, or America's going down the drain, like feels really harmful and targeted because it is.
And it's scary to me. It's very scary to me, because I do see I see going backwards, when we had been coming, I hope, to a place where acceptance, you just accept whatever someone's feeling of themselves, their belief in themselves, of who or what they were, as long as it didn't harm you, right? Like, what's so scary about that for some people? I don't
And
know.
like not even acceptance, but like appreciation and like
Oh, that
valuing and celebrating. So like yeah, I get what you're
performance.
saying of like going from this. It also seems to like a lot of things are coming off as fear-based of like going back to wherever, going back to this. Like that's coming from a fear mindset and a scared mindset of
Yeah.
like do this or else bad things are going to happen if we don't do this. That is not a mindset of like celebration or connection or growth. In schools, they talk about growth mindset and they teach, children all about having a growth mindset and learning different things. All of this like demonizing of certain populations or certain peoples is very much like this directly impacts me or this harms my view of life, therefore it should not exist. Like
Right.
that's really scary and upsetting.
Yeah. And I am not targeting when I'm saying these things. I am not including all straight white men because I'm married to a straight white man who is nothing like that either.
The cisgenders can learn, Mimi. They can learn new tricks.
Yeah, I'm not lumping them all together, but I'm saying that's usually where I see it rising up. And you work with a lot of young people, correct, in your practice? And what kind of lasting effects do you think all of that prejudice that we were just talking about has on their emotional and mental well-being?
It
Yeah.
has like lasting and meaningful effects. In my experience, it The messages that kids and families receive can be internalized and can hit really hard, especially when we're exploring identity or exploring different aspects of identity. No one wants to feel like left out or othered or like not accepted or not supported. So when these overall like big messages are coming out, we can have the most beautiful support from our family and from our social system and social supports and from our schools and from different systems having a lot of supports. But sometimes these big messages of like, this is wrong, this is bad, this is not good, that can still hit us and cause a lot of turmoil, a lot of distress, can sometimes show up as anxiety, can sometimes show up as depression. In some ways, in different experiences, it can show up as PTSD. So, like, they have direct and lasting impacts.
Yes. Have you had experience with any of your clients that developed PTSD from something that happened to them?
Oh, I
No, I
didn't think
should
about
say
that one. I have to like, go back in my
while
Rolodex.
you're thinking, I'll say for me, I have PTSD for a lot of reasons: abuse of marriage, domestic violence, attempted rape. I had some traumatic things, and I have anxiety. I have chronic anxiety, which I'm treated for. And so I know that I have lasting effects from those things. Even though I'm not actively thinking about them, something will happen that will trigger a feeling. Okay. So do you have any clients that you have to deal with things like that?
Oh, often. A lot of my clients report trauma symptoms. Some, it depends because our lovely Diagnostic and Statistical Manual version 5, like, is not written a lot with like people and how people are involved as like checklist of symptoms. So someone may not meet like the full criteria for all of the PTSD, but like have very real and present trauma symptoms. Also, the treatment is not that different, to be honest. So like how they're supported in their therapy journey is going to be really similar if we're having trauma symptoms versus if we officially meet the diagnostic criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder.
Exactly.
So a lot of people like have trauma like symptoms and experiences and are seeking support for that. Another thing I found too is like a lot of people come, in my experience, have come to me for therapy or come for therapy support, have not initially reported PTSD, reported seeking trauma, but like trauma has a way of coming out. Trauma has a way of coming to the party if it's present. So we may be coming of like, I have a really hard time going to sleep. My anxiety keeps thoughts racing through my brain. Then sometimes we get into it and like have traumatic things that have happened to us, have a traumatic thing in our past, have a traumatic thing that happened 6 months ago. So sometimes it rears its head, makes sense of like why these thoughts are racing, why these thoughts are going down. Some people too get stuck in the like, it's called differential diagnosis of like if this or that, or not this but that. I talk a way of like sometimes everybody's coming to the party. Sometimes we're linked. So we can have trauma and anxiety. We can have PTSD and depression. They don't always have to cancel each other out. Sometimes we get a fun little mix that we get to
Oh,
experience.
I have the mix.
Yeah,
I
as you experience, Mimi.
have the mix because, alcohol was my medication for many years. And when I got sober and I went to a 28-day facility, they said, you have chronic depression and panic disorder, and you're dual diagnosed, which means you can be addicted to anything if you think it's going to numb your feelings. I went, oh, bonanza. I hit the jackpot.
Look at me go.
And I found, and that did happen. I got an addiction to food for the first 9 months. I went to treatment for that. And then I had family of origin issues. I went somewhere for that. My husband was like, are you going to go away every year someplace? And I
Like
said,
maybe, I
I did. I said, if I have to.
don't know.
And
Right.
I did counseling for 9 years straight. I did group and I did solo and I did everything. And I'm still in counseling. And I still get triggered sometimes, and I still need to learn how to set better boundaries. And I'm 75 years old. I mean, it's not like it goes away. There's no magic pill.
Right. Well, also there's no endpoint. Like, and healed, and I'm done, and like nothing will ever happen to me ever again. I'm never gonna have another flashback or another trigger. I'm perfectly healed and perfect human. Like, that doesn't exist in my experience. So it's like a lifelong thing. Sometimes I talk about too in trauma treatment of like, The goal is not to be like, and done, ding, I'm cooked, I'm ready out the oven, I'm all good to go. Like, it's a continual process. Like, it's not fun
Oh,
to always remember to brush our teeth, but
I'm
it's
a
the same
perfect
kind of maintenance
example.
thing.
I'm a perfect example of that, you know. And as a survivor of trauma, I often struggle with emotional regulation, meaning sometimes what should be just a small frustration or a comment that I don't like can trigger such emotional explosion in me where I become enraged or very upset. And I've only recently, and I mean last couple of years, have learned to sit, don't react, not be reactive, because that's what I would do. Not to react, but to sit with the feeling and say, okay, why are you feeling like that? They were 10 minutes late for lunch. Why are you so upset? You know what I mean? And it all has to do with abandonment issues for me. That's what I'm triggered. But you must see that a lot in your clients where they have certain reactions that don't seem proportional to the situation, right?
Totally. Well, as part of like trauma brain and how trauma is encoded in the brain, it's not like a clear direct line or like an easy memory. It can be things why it's like, oh, someone's running late. That means they don't care about me. That means that they don't want me. That means that they're rejecting me and ending my friendship and I'm never going to see them again. So, like,
Yes.
that's not a clear developed line, but it's how the trauma sometimes is encoded in our brain that goes, oh, I think something scary is going to happen. Okay, I'm going to react this way to make sure that I protect myself from the scary not happening. Sometimes I
Yeah.
talk about like the tiger. Like we are relaxing, we react like there's a tiger in the room when sometimes it's a cat or like a piece of lint. But like our system is trained to react to the tiger. Well, then
Exactly.
we as humans get really frustrated of like, it's not a tiger. My friend is 10 minutes late. But it's like retraining ourselves or like having the space for ourselves of like, hey, this was protecting me at one point. I may not need this level of protection. How can I support myself in these ways?
Yeah, all of that, I agree. So everyone can't go to you, Elizabeth. I mean, Emily.
Sorry.
Everybody can't go to you, Emily. I have another person I interviewed yesterday, maybe Elizabeth. So if someone's thinking about therapy, what question should they ask a potential therapist to see if they're the right therapist for them, would you say?
What is it? I think the main thing is kind of like when sometimes when we're seeking therapy, we're already kind of like overwhelmed or like needing support with something and needing stuff. So it can be a lot to be like, oh, I have to remember more stuff, but kind of focusing on like, what am I seeking support for? I am seeking a therapist for, I really want to get a handle on my anxiety. I feel like I'm ready to talk about some stuff that happened in my childhood. My relationship with my partner is really frustrating me and I'm responding in ways that I'm not comfortable with, and I really want to work that out. So kind of clarifying like why therapy, why now, what we want to address, what we want to work on. We don't have to come in with like perfect treatment goals of like, I want to in 6 weeks be able to go to sleep every night at 10 p.m. That might be a hard expectation for us and our therapists, but just like general things kind of like, hey, what made us curious about it? What made us make the call? What made us want to book the intake? And kind of sharing that and connecting of like, hey, is this person reporting that they are specializing in anxiety? Is this person only working with like family issues that I don't really want to delve into that? I just want
That's what I was
anxiety.
going to just say.
That
This
can
is
give you like kind of a guideline. And
right.
then
And
asking
this,
too, go ahead.
and I was just saying that now we're into the positive aspect of the internet, because people have a website. And if you Google anxiety, doctor, whatever, things will pop up. So you can do a lot of research on your computer ahead of time and find out who in your area deals with certain things. And then And I know you know this, but for other people to know this too, that you have to build trust and rapport with your teenage clients even more than you would an adult. I think they're harder to get to open up. Am I right or wrong there?
It depends. I personally love working with teenagers sometimes because they're spicy, because they're prickly.
Young. You're
So,
young.
like, some adults, when it's like, oh, teens need this or teens need that, like, sometimes the generalizations don't apply all the time. So, sometimes I have some adults that are prickly. Life has not been kind to us, life has not treated us a certain way.
Bitter.
So, that sometimes they need that time to develop that relationship before being like, hi. Nice to meet you. I want to get right into my trauma. Some people are ready for that. Some people, that's not where they're at. Teens can be similar in a way of like, hello, stranger that my parents drove me here to talk to. What? You want me to talk about my deepest, darkest secrets? I would
Exactly.
much rather be in the group chat on my phone, like sending messages on Snapchat.
Of
Totally understand.
course.
So if I'm like,
Yes.
no, tell me all of your deepest, darkest secrets right
No,
now, they're
no.
not going to respond positively to that in my experience. But
No.
they also can build like beautiful and strong and meaningful relationships. They're just meeting them where they're at.
3 years ago, when my depression came back very strongly, and I was advised to go back into therapy. I told my therapist, well, we were seeing each other for a while, and she was telling me to write. And I ended up that first year of therapy writing my first book, my memoir, which is Raised by Wolves, Trapped by Demons. And the wolves were my parents, and the demons were the men. And then we're still doing therapy the second year, and she'd ask me something. I'd say, well, you read my book. And I always tease her, and I go, just go to chapter five.
Right.
That's my sense of humor. But she does have a little edge on somebody else, because I do have everything in there. And that's helpful for both of us. So do you have any success stories, or what are some indicators that you know things are going well with a client? How do you know that you're making progress?
Great question. Sometimes
Yeah.
a good like marker or baseline we go back to a lot is like level of functioning. Now that can sound really like clinical and boring, but just of like, hey, did we come in not being able to go to sleep every night, getting 4 hours of sleep at most, struggling to do, daily hygiene tasks, things are really overwhelming. Oh my goodness, like sleep is a little bit easier for us. Or like we feel better when we do certain hygiene tasks and like they don't feel like burdens or tasks anymore. They're sometimes just like fun or engaging to do. So those can be nice markers of like not generally success, but also just like, oh, like I feel better. I feel more comfortable. I am able to do things that I wasn't able to do 6 weeks ago. Those can be nice things to reflect on because they can feel more concrete than all of this like abstract
Yeah.
mind, psychology talk that we're going through of like, oh, wait, like I was able to leave my house more. Awesome.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it, when you see that, those little flickers. Well, I'm like an overachiever. So my therapist, I have to say, well, how'd I do this week? And she goes, okay, you get an A. Well, we're out of time. And next time I want to talk to you again, because I want to talk about mental health in more to the stigma of mental health in the teenage population, specifically bipolar disorder. So thank you so much, Emily. I gave him a little teaser about what our next talk will be about. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
And you have a website?
LarkspurTherapy.com.
There you go. Thanks again, everyone. Have a great day, and just let the stuff out. Don't keep it in. All right. Bye-bye.